All right, we are officially launched the Unlearning Her podcast. This has been about 5 years in the making that Brianne and I have been talking about doing this. For those of you that don't know, Brianne and I are sisters. Not that this ever matters because this has never been a thing for us, but I feel like it is going to come up in this. She is my half sister. We have the same mom, and my dad adopted her.
Biologically different dad.
Biologically different dad.
My daddy.
Yeah. So that, and that's why it's like never been like, I've never introduced her ever to anyone as my half sister. She's always been my sister, period. But because of what we're talking about, and because you do have a biologically different dad, I feel like maybe on our first podcast, people should know that. Okay. The second thing is, Brianne just had her 40th birthday.
She did.
Happy birthday. But right before that, she decided to have a stroke.
Also true.
So if during the podcast there are pauses or stuttering or words that don't make sense, it's because her brain wants to take a break.
Just be patient.
So, she is going to go, and then she's going to say the word. Okay? Are we good with that? Cool.
Yeah.
Now that we've cleared that up. All right. We were just talking before I hit record about what we wanted to talk about tonight. And I think where we're going to, because there's so much, guys. There really is so much. We don't even know where to start. But also, like, there's so much that we need context with. And so I think what we decided, correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to start with mom and dad getting divorced after how many years?
35, like, together. 34 before the divorce. So 34 to 35 years they were together.
Yeah. So they were together for 34, 35 years. And we're going to talk mm-hmm. about how Brianne and I have gone through a lot of therapy in the last several years and how we thought we were good. And then this divorce happened and then everything changed. And we realized that there's a lot more triggers and things that I guess we hadn't dealt with that came up. So do you want to start? I mean, and I will say Brianne has been, okay, Brianne has been amazing through all of this in supporting our dad. However, my brain was like, you're going to step back and you're going to sit on the back burner. So thank you, Brianne. And I think that you should start with your triggers. I was just like, my dad calling, and I'm not going to talk about that right now because it's too hard for me.
I think that's fair. I don't really know exactly where to start with this because I felt for a long time like the dysfunction of the relationship, and not because that's mine to talk about, but because I had saw things that I felt that both of them deserved to be better.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I don't think that one of them was more guilty than the other.
Mm-mm.
I will say that my hardship through all of this and where this divorce directly affected me, my relationship, and the relationship with my children was I had buried so much of my hurt and my pain from either living in that house or watching that relationship or how I was treated that being there for my dad and trying to like help him understand or encourage or all of those things definitely brought a lot of triggers and unburied a lot of things that I thought I had like dealt with or weren't that big of a deal to me.
Yeah.
And so in trying to figure out with you, like, where to start, because ultimately, and what I don't want to ever be misconstrued, is this isn't a bash session for me. This is truly like
can we just say, like, truly, like, breaking the generational, like, trauma and curse and trying to, like, stop it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the truth. Sorry. But I still learn stuff from them, right? And maybe that wasn't in the intent that they tried to teach us. But I definitely unlearned some of the stuff that they tried to teach us. Mm-hmm. And that the title of this is, was literally that important to me, because it's just unlearning the generational issues that have been passed down, so that the pattern does not have to continue to our children. And that's not to say I'm not passing off something that couldn't be.
Oh, gosh.
By far am I perfect, but I think that my hardest thing in growing up was the lack of affection and the lack of verbal affirmation. Mm-hmm. And so those are things that I've applied heavily in my parenting, along with just being completely transparent and unconditional. And I have had people, including yourself, be like, why do you talk like that in front of your kids? Stop saying that in front of them. And maybe I've gone 180 way more than anybody else would. But there's freedom in transparency. Mm. And there's freedom in comfortability. And I would rather that space for my kids be with me than them seeking that with someone else.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen kind of like the trend on social media recently, but there's a trend going around about how, like, it's like a mom sitting there with her kids and it's like, don't forget that, like, this is our first time being a parent and this is our mm-hmm. first time, like, experiencing this child as a newborn and then a toddler and then as a preteen and a teenager and a young adult. And so I think that that's really important to understand that, like, I don't think that I truly do believe that mom and dad loved us, like, as much as they possibly knew how, right? Like, in the way that they were taught and the way that they knew how. And it's not trying to come in here and be like, because you didn't love me this way or didn't do these things, I am the way that I am, because that's not what it is. We all have to take accountability at some point in our life and say, okay, wait a second. Like, I could have done this much better. I could have treated you this way. It's all about taking that ownership and then trying to be better for your kids and that generation and then them taking it. But I would agree with you, the lack of affection and the lack of words of affirmation and the constantly having to kind of prove yourself does affect, like, our choices and our decisions, based off of, like, our childhood. And even for our kids now, like, what we do affects them and their decisions. And I think that that's, like, the, oh yeah. Oh, I do too. Oh my gosh.
Are you proud of me?
I feel, you know, seriously though, I feel like a child when I, like, do stuff for, like, my job. And I'm like, oh my God, tell me I did a good job. That's all I want. I am. I also am, like, severely ADHD, and I feel like that plays a part in it as well. But
it's a double-edged sword, though, don't you think? Because as much as I crave somebody being my hype person or, like, being so proud of me, compliments make me uncomfortable.
Oh my gosh, yes!
Yeah.
What is that?
Like, do I deserve that? Is that true?
Do they believe that? Do they really think that? Or are they just saying that?
Something for that?
Yeah.
tally game? Shit. Like, and then you're like questioning somebody's intentions and yeah.
Yeah, it's like you can never trust if they're like actually like intentionally saying like, oh, dang, you did a really good job, or if they're just doing that because they want something later on from you. What is wrong with us?
Trauma.
It's so real though. And then I feel so needy and I'm like, I don't want to be needy, but also.
I wasn't needy. I'm more needy in the last couple of years, and I don't know if that's my age or what, but I don't want to be the leader anymore.
I don't want to be the leader anymore either.
I did it. I was taught that. And again, probably completely unintentional from our parents, but the woman was definitely the leader in our home.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
I've been the leader in my home, and
it's exhausting.
It's not even that it's exhausting. It's just, it's not effortless. And it's come with, I don't know how anyone else can give me the stability that I give myself. And that's my own unhealed wounds and my own toxicity that I know that I bring to the table, because there's a level of control that I have to have
mm-hmm.
around me and in my home to feel that it's stable and secure and no one can take it from me.
Yeah. So I think though, a lot of that need for control was because we did not have a secure environment that we grew up in. And it's not to say that we didn't have like stability, like we were bouncing all over the place and that kind of thing. It's more of like, it wasn't secure in the sense where our nervous system, and I know that I've gone a lot deeper into this than you have, so just sit back and listen to me, because I have listened. Our nervous systems,
Linda.
Listen, our nervous systems were not regulated by mom and dad because they weren't regulated themselves, right? Okay, so dad had super hard, high anxiety. Mom was not emotionally available to us. And so we were not able to have a secure attachment to either one of them because it was always very chaotic, right? There was never like a security in that. We could not come and say, I'm going through this. I'm really struggling with this. Like, I don't know why my brain is thinking this. I don't know what's going on. Can you please help walk me through this? It was like, it was so black and white and so logical that there was no security in that. So yeah. Now as adults, we crave stability and security in our lives so hard that like, it makes us sick.
It's interesting too that we're talking about that, because as much as I crave stability and I crave consistency, it's also terrifying.
I know.
Yeah. And I don't know why that is. And to counteract what you're saying, I do think that we bounced around. I don't think that it wasn't because we didn't know. And I always think that it was a lateral move, like from a startup home to the next home to a bigger home.
No, I agree with that. No, you're right.
There was still, or people in and out of our lives, or family in and out of our lives, or all of a sudden they're not okay anymore. They are okay.
Yeah.
For reasons that were never disclosed to us. I feel like I've spent the majority of my life on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what I'm necessarily running from, because it's not like I don't know how to do hard things.
No.
I've done hard things.
We choose hard things more than often.
But the hard things are being vulnerable, and the hard things are staying centered, and the hard things are, those are the hard things that I have to overcome at 40, because I didn't know how to do it when I was 20 or 30, or I've been a feast or famine, fight or flight, survive or be dead for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and I think that people are starting to realize that too, because I have had conversations with other people who have had similar like upbringings and stuff. And you do end up just like, your body can only handle so much emotionally and mentally. And I don't think that we have put enough weight on that in society, because especially like growing up in our home, it was like, you just deal with it. You know, like you just, you, something happens. Okay. It is what it is. We're going to make the best of it. And we're just going to move on to the next thing. But there was never any like, okay, well, this is making me feel this certain way. Like, why am I thinking this? All of these things. There was never processing through it. It was just traumatic event, traumatic event, traumatic event. It is what it is. We're going to go on to the next thing, and we're going to wait for the next thing to happen. I think probably your traumatic experiences in life started when Travis was not there and Dad came into the picture. But then it ended up being like Grandpa dying and Sissy dying and all of this like religious shame and guilt that we also had to walk through. And it was just like this, like never any stability, right? And you, like you said, grandparents were taken away from us, or people that we thought were important to us were taken away from us. And it was just always very chaotic. And that is why we've lived in such this, like, I feel like messed up, chaotic fight or flight state for so long. What is the word I'm looking for? Survival. That was the word that I was looking for. Survival.
Don't ask me.
You're doing really good. And we just all say how well Brian is doing. I'm really proud of you.
I can't feel my finger.
That's good. But one of the things that I loved when you said, when you sent unlearning her, when you sent this title, was I have desperately been trying for the last like 4 years to unlearn coping mechanisms and behaviors and things that I did learn growing up and being in that constant state of survival, so that I don't pass that on to my kids. You know what I mean? I think that like both of us too have tried so hard to not pass things on to our kids. And yet obviously some things are going to be passed on because you can't help it. But I think both of us have like, all right, I desperately want to be different. Like, I don't know what that looks like. I'm going to try all of these different things to get there, but I don't want my kids to experience what I've experienced. I want better for them. And I think that as parents, all of us want that for our kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely, I can confidently say, I think I'm an excellent mom. That doesn't mean that I'm without fault or have not had to apologize to my children. But I look at my youngest, who's about to be 16, and my oldest, who's about to be 22, with a great amount of pride. The majority of that was done alone.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And if that's like, if that's the testimony I get to live by, like, how freaking cool is that? Because I didn't have that.
No. No.
Yeah.
Oh. No. I know. There was a lot of conditions to getting affection and working for it and all of that stuff. And I know, like, I'm just like being totally transparent. I think that you caught on a lot earlier than I did. And just in the last like 2 to 3 years,
like a 20-year difference.
Yeah, I have tried to change, but I mean, if we're being honest, and we talked about this earlier on, we did a video earlier, but it was a little all over the place, so we decided not to do it. But earlier I had mentioned that for my personality in particular, I had put mom on a pedestal for most of my life. I mean, really, like, if we're being completely honest, like, mom's opinion and all of that stuff was right up there with like God for me. Like it was like her, everything that I did, whether it was to make her proud or not, I would think about how it would, what she would think about it and how, if she would be proud or if she would like go to her family or, you know, people, her friends and be like, I'm so proud of Brittany or whatever. And I think that, I put her up there for so long and then I finally realized that it doesn't matter and I can't live my life like that. I have to literally take ownership for myself and accountability for my own stuff. And I have to start being better for my kids. For you, I feel like you started that a lot sooner than I did, just based off the fact that we were not, you did not have a lot of relationships like with mom and dad over the years, right? It was very sporadic. It was very like, you're here and then you're not, and then you're here and then you're not. All like for the last 20 years. Am I wrong?
24.
24 years. Okay. And like for me, it was justified that like you weren't acting right or you weren't acting a certain way. And so that's why we were justifying not having you in our life, which is so like now that I'm on the other side of that, is so absolutely asinine to me that like you could literally not be a part of your family's life because they made decisions that you don't like. You know what I mean? But for so long, I justified it just like wanting to make sure that like I was still the good kid and, you know, yeah. But I feel like there was pressure on me because Sissy died when she was nine and she had buried when I was nine. And she, when that's what I meant. And you had left and there was all of these lies being spread about you. And so I did feel an immense amount of pressure to be the good daughter.
We won't have to talk about how many parties I picked you up from.
Listen. You already said earlier, oh, you got pregnant at 17. I got pregnant. You did. You've always been there for me. Always, no matter what. There wasn't that many parties.
Fred Myers.
Oh, God.
My point is there was a point. There was a point in my life where all of this consumed me.
Mm.
And I let that go probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Where the hate that I had and the confusion that I had and the not understanding why maybe I wasn't good enough or the inability to truly forgive anything that I did as a teenager or a young adult, that now having my own children is incredibly age appropriate. Everything that I did incredibly age appropriate and normal and not one thing that I did should have been forsaken the way that I was.
Yeah.
And so
100%.
I had to let go of a lot of that to where I can't think of the word that I want, but I know that it's in my brain. I guess what I'm ultimately trying to say is I had to uncage the hatred in my heart and the lack of understanding that was consuming my heart because it was not hurting any of the people that hurt me. It was hurting myself.
Yeah.
And so fast forward to this situation, which mind you, I am not mad at my dad. I am not mad at my mom. I am sad by their relationship being the way that it is. I'm grateful that I was able to be a source of support for my dad during that time. And that whole experience, I think, really brought Dad and I closer together. And so for those things, I'm grateful. But I do remember looking one day and just even saying, like, I'm not okay. This is really hard. Like, this
it's
is
really
actually
hard.
Affecting me.
Yeah.
And having to go back to, and not to say that he didn't already recognize that, but it definitely took me time to admit that those phone calls and being, you know, Dad apologized to me for so many things that were done to me or said about me that I was like, I forgot that that happened. And oh yeah, that did happen. And like, it set me back. It set me back hold on.
Mm-hmm.
It set me back into a time where I remembered feeling so small and undervalued.
Yeah.
That almost went frantic in my, I didn't almost, I did. I went frantic in my own relationship with my boyfriend and with my children.
Trying to fix it.
This approval that I already had from them.
Yeah.
But I needed them to say, you're good enough, or I'm gonna stay with you, I wanna be with you, you're the best mom, like we're everything's good, and then not know how to communicate that because I'm like in this my own internal battle of like, oh yeah, all that shit happened to me. Like, you know, so yeah, I think that as much as I didn't want to start current to past, it is what is happening currently that is triggering and bringing up those things from my past and your past that need to be talked about. And whether there's ever true healing or moving past that, there has to be acknowledgement that it happened.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I don't even really know, like, because I'm trying to process through my own stuff, because the stuff that happened with Mom and Dad also affected my own marriage, and inadvertently, among other things. And I didn't realize how much it would have affected it until it all happened. And it's crazy because you said, I forgot about those things. I remember a few years ago when we were driving in the car with the kids, and the kids kept asking Brent and I about for us to tell them stories of our childhood. Okay. And Brent could like literally just sit there and like rattle off all of these stories in detail about his childhood and like things that he did as a kid and all that stuff. And I don't know if it was the loss of Sis, and also losing Grandpa and that trauma, but I sat there and I literally could not think of like any childhood stories. Like I had, my brain had blocked out so much of the past. And I'm not saying that that's because of Mom and Dad. So please don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying at all. But the point is that the trauma that we experienced and the inability to like process through that did affect my memory of what had happened back then. And so, yeah. So since then, I have had to try to like go through, and it's so weird. I'm telling you, I will literally be doing the most random thing. And since I've like done therapy and like worked through a lot of stuff, the most random story will come back into my head, and it will pop into my head of something that happened. So it's crazy that like, cause you blocked a lot of that stuff out and what you experienced and stuff. But I think that that was because of trauma. And I also understand what that's like. And I think that a lot of people can also resonate with that as they're listening to this, if they've also experienced a lot of trauma and a lot of like, you know, what you went through and stuff. So, Anyways, we're going
to
keep these.
I want to also say something to that, too, because as much as I blocked out, there's memories that I have with mom and dad camping or the East Coast trip with mom, or like there's definitely good quality time that was spent there.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. Especially holidays for me.
Oh yeah. Mom was good about birthdays and Christmas.
Yeah. Like birthdays, Thanksgiving, yeah. Christmas. She always made us feel super special and really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree with that for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm talking more about like the more intimate details. And again, I think that we're like on different stages here because I went more like into the brain. But we can talk about that stuff too. But no, I agree with that. Mom always threw us birthday parties. Like I remember your 16th birthday party was so mm-hmm. freaking fun. Always doing that stuff. And I think that was her way of showing love. I really do. Like, oh, yeah. I think that was her mm-hmm. way of being like, I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to make it a big event and I'm going to show you, this is how I love you.
Our clean house. I mean, she definitely had different ways of showing that. Absolutely.
Right.
I think my only comment to that is, but when we would ask for it to be done differently, it was met with such defense. Like, yeah. I appreciate that the house is clean, but also simple words of permission or that affection or
just a hug, just a freaking hug. Can you just give me a hug?
Yeah. I mean, I see how affectionate my kids are with me. Like I still hold all of their hands and like my kids crawl in bed with me and we watch a movie. I don't remember ever doing those things with mom.
No, I mean, dad
held my hand. I think probably till I was 13 or 14 years old, and when we got married, we'd hold it in the car.
Dad has always been really good at giving affection.
Well, he needs it.
That's me. I need to be. Well, I feel that way, so I know what that's like.
Too much, you don't want anyone touching you.
Listen,
in my bubble,
when you have five kids that are very close, listen, no, I know that you have four. I'm just saying, I had the last four back to back, and I was completely touched out for several years, nursing, pregnant, always had someone hanging on me. That's not the affection that I was exactly talking about. It's the, the coming up.
Kisses on your face and kisses on your cheek. And
yes. Like, yes, like words of affirmation with affection goes a long way. And honestly, if there's anything that we can learn about this, and you obviously have done that too, but as listeners, is that like your kid wants you to touch them. They literally want you to hug them and love them and tell them they're doing a good job. I have two kids, Mackenzie and Elliot, that try to act like they don't want me to touch them. They'll be like, no, get away from me, mom. They're the ones that want it the most. They are literally the ones that need it the most. They need the most affection out of all of the other ones. They literally need it. Okay. And so if there's anything that you can learn as parents from this podcast, if that is what you are, is to go give your kid a hug. And like, I actually read, because that's what I do, that kids actually need to be hugged 9 times a day. I know, but I'm just saying, like, for their brains to feel stable and secure, they actually need to be hugged 9 times a day. Mm-hmm. So go hug your kid 9 times today. And tell them, even if they're doing a shitty job, tell them they're doing a good job because they're literally just trying. Like, all of us are just out here trying to do our best.
When you have a Landon for a kid,
any
effort is worth praise.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, like the affection and the words of affirmation go so far. with kids in general, especially like in these days where like social media and we're so connected with everyone, but we're actually so out of touch with everyone.
Yeah.
Touching your kids and telling them that you love them and that they're doing a good job and you're proud of them is important. Why are you laughing?
Touching your kids.
I'm
hugging your children.
Brianna. Don't touch your kids.
That didn't come out very well.
Go hug a kid.
Specifically your own. What are we advertising here exactly? Oh, my Lanta.
Okay, you know what? I think that that's actually good because we were only supposed to go with 30 minutes and it's 35. So we're just going to end that. Don't go touch your kids. Go hug your kid and tell them that they're doing a good job. Period. All right? And we will see you on the next episode of Unlearning Her. Bye.